Welcome to They Mostly Pirate at Night. Mostly, I am Salem, joined by my co-host Graveyard.
Hello.
This is episode 168. Yes, 168 of our weekly All Things Horror podcast. This week, we continue the month of Salem, my month, by taking a journey through the twisted mind of David Lynch. I'm sure Graveyard enjoyed all of these movies. I'm sure he's going to give high scores to all of them. You either love him or you hate him, but there's no denying his impact on the movie world as a whole. These movies may not technically belong in the horror category, but I'm calling it close enough. I mean, most of them have like the, you know, at least thriller.
They do.
So like, kind of thriller kind of fits in horror category. But again, if you're thinking horror, you probably wouldn't think David Lynch.
Definitely horror adjacent for sure.
Right. Yeah. I'd say Lost Highway is probably the most horror-ish, but most of them I would kind of categorize them as like noir-y detective stories.
Yeah. And it's I think for some of these, in my opinion, it might be hard to summarize the story because there's just so much randomness.
There is. And, you know, Blue Velvet's pretty tame as far as that. There's a lot of goofy stuff going on, but it's everything pretty much makes sense. There's some things that are like kind of sort of strange, but like at the end, we get all the answers. It's like there's nothing up in the air. Twin Peaks is Twin Peaks. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Because I've never seen the show. So watching this movie, there's a lot of shit I don't get. So there's a lot of weird, like, symbolism and characters that I don't know who they are, but you're supposed to, like, know who they are because they kind of play pivotal weird roles. So that's interesting. And Lost Highway has a lot of weird shit. There's no denying that.
Yeah.
For sure. But yeah, no, I mean, that's kind of what he's known for. As he went along, he got weirder and weirder. But I mean, like, Eraserhead. You ever see Eraserhead?
Not in a very long
time. Yeah, it's like one of his very first movies. That's really weird. So, like, most of his movies are really weird, but he's made a few that are straight.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway. So we're going to start off with Blue Velvet from 1986. There's a lot happening here. I'm going to try to make it as simple as I can. We don't really get to the crazy confusing stuff in this movie, but there is a lot of moving parts. So one is there's a guy who's a young guy who's Cal McLaughlin, which I know he's relatively young in this movie, right? I think I calculated it. He's like 27. Mm-hmm. But he just looks old. He just looks like an older. I don't think he's one of those people that he's always looked older than he is.
For sure.
But yeah, I mean, he's in his 20s. It's not that far off. Anyway, so he's in college. He gets called back because his dad has, I don't know.
I looked it up because I was very confused. Like, what happened? He just claps. And like, was it the insects? Was it the hose? No, apparently it was a stroke. That made him like have a throat ventilator too. Whatever.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, it seemed like there's way too many things going on for it to be like a heart attack or something. Like, I was like, I don't know what the fuck happened. Did he break his neck? Because he was in like a halo. The throat, I don't, whatever. Anyway, that doesn't matter. That's just the reason to bring him back. So he comes back. He's visiting his dad and he walks through like an empty lot on his way to and from the hospital. And he's picking up rocks and throwing it at this old shed. And he ends up finding an ear, a human ear, on the ground. And so as you do, he picks it up and puts it in a bag, and brings it to the police station. And he goes, hey, look, I found this ear. And they're like, oh, yeah, that's an ear. Like, let's see what we can find out. And they basically cut him out of the investigation. And he's like dying to know what's going on with this ear. So he kind of sort of like hooks up with the detective's daughter, trying to like get information as to what is going on with the case. It kind of starts innocently enough, but it does eventually end up as kind of like a weird love story. We'll get there later. So she basically says, oh yeah, they've apparently linked this ear to this nightclub singer that lives in this apartment building. She doesn't know how or why it's connected to her, but she knows that she's kind of involved in some way. So Cal McLaughlin is like, okay, I'm going to break into that apartment to see what I can find out. And they come up with this goofy plan where, like, him and the detective's daughter, Laura Dern, are going to, you know, have this elaborate plan where he's going to pretend like he's a bug guy spraying for bugs, and she's going to be a Jehovah's Witness and come to the door so he can, like, open the window and sneak in later, whatever. None of that actually happens. He gets in, he's like the bug man, and he steals keys that he finds laying out. So later on that night, he comes back when she's like, they go to this club to make sure that she's singing at the club. They leave the club, go back to the apartment, unlock it, go inside. Well, the girl waits outside. She's supposed to honk the horn when the lady comes. Anyway, he's looking around the apartment. She does honk the horn, but he's too busy taking a piss to hear it. Why he would just like take a piss in somebody's house you've broken into, I don't know. But so they're coming in the door, and he's like, oh shit, what am I gonna do? So he hides in the closet. It's like, of course, there's a big closet in the living room with the slats that he can see through. So she gets dropped off. She, like, you know, undresses and acts like weirdly weird dramatic. And then she finds out that he's there. And he comes out, and she, like, holds a knife on him, like, stabs him in the face a little bit, not a lot, a little bit, and then, like, threatens him, and then starts, like, making out with them. And then there's, like, some kind of weird stuff going on where she doesn't want him to look at her, but she wants to, like, it's a weird fucking thing. We find out why shortly. Somebody else knocks on the door. She throws him back in the closet. And then Dennis Hopper comes in, who's apparently, like, her real boyfriend. I guess that's.
I would say he's the guy that's holding her husband and kid hostage. And
right. So... Yeah. So he comes in. There's like a weird sex thing happening. It's fucking weird, bizarre stuff. Where like Dennis Hopper's like breathing laughing gas while he's like wiggling around on her. What's going on there?
Don't look at me.
Right, yeah. Like literally punching her. Anyway. So. He leaves. Cal McLaughlin kind of, you know, comes out like, are you okay? And then she again, like, does this whole thing of like, I want to make out with you, but I hate you and I want you to hit me and blah, blah. And he's like, all right, I'm getting out of here.
Mm-hmm.
So he leaves. So he basically tells the story to Laura Dern, like, you're not going to believe this weird ass shit going on. So they kind of sort of get closer and bond over this. While he is going over to her house, the singer lady's house, to like bone her once in a while, behind the back of her like weird thing. But anyway, he ends up finding out that the ear was removed from the singer's husband to threaten her, like, you need to do what we tell you to do, or we're going to kill your husband, not just cut his ear off. And we find out that there's also her kid is being held hostage as well. So one time when Cal McLaughlin goes to visit her, Dennis Hopper catches him and then puts him in his car, and they drive over to this, I don't know, brothel. I don't know what that was. And then the singer lady was able to go in and see her kid. But like, you know, they basically threaten and beat up Cal McLaughlin and kind of leave him beat up. And basically Dennis Hopper says, you go anywhere near her, I'm going to kill you. And so he kind of tries to avoid her, and he starts like dating Laura Dern.
Yes.
And so they go to like, I don't know, some fucking dance or so, like a high school dance or something. Anyway, so then like they're getting chased. He thinks it's Dennis Hopper, but it's actually Laura Dern's boyfriend. Mike, whatever. So they like, you know, they're all drunk, and he's like, oh, let's fight. And so they go to his house, and who is like naked outside his house is the singer lady.
His secret lover.
Right. Yeah. So like, yeah, Laura Dern finds out about his weird, you know, trysts he's been having with this lady, they call the cops, they get her to go home, whatever. And then they get her to go back in the hospital, whatever. And he goes back to the house to like find out what happened. And he sees her husband with the missing ear is dead, like tied to a chair, dead. The detective's partner, who was part of this whole thing, is like standing there with a big head wound, like unable to like move or talk or do anything. He's just like standing.
Like catatonic dying concussion.
Right. Yeah. So like, yeah. He's like, what the fuck is going on? So anyway, so the detective has enough evidence against Dennis Hopper at this point. He's raiding his house. Dennis Hopper ends up getting away from the raid in a goofy disguise.
Hey, he's a sharp dressed man. Hey,
he looks like a show. So he gets to the place. He realizes, oh shit, it's him. So he takes the cop, who's standing here with the head wounds, radio, says, hey, Dennis Hopper is here at the house. You got to come get me. I'm going to hide in the back bedroom, knowing that Dennis Hopper also has a police radio.
Mm-hmm.
So he throws the radio in the back bedroom and he goes back in the closet with the slats again. So Dennis Hopper is like, making fun of him, like, hey, I know you're in there. You forgot I had a police radio, blah, blah, blah. So he runs in there to get him. And he pulls the gun. Sorry, Kyle MacLachlan pulls the gun from the guy with the head wound. Dennis Hopper comes back in, shoots that guy, shoots the guy in the chair again. Is angry, like, where is going on? And he eventually figures out, oh, he's got to be in this closet. So he goes to open the door, and Kyle MacLachlan shoots him, and that's it. that's pretty much it. Like after that is like. Kind of like a happily ever after
sometime later.
Yeah. Sometime later. It's like happily ever after, the singer lady's got her kid back and she's all happy. And then Kyle MacLachlan and Laura Dern are like together, whatever.
And his dad with his unknown ailment better now. So
yes, okay. He's fine.
Yep.
But yeah, it's like, it's a bizarrely happy ending for a David Lynch movie, but there it is.
Yeah. I wonder, because, like I said, I did, a little bit of research because I didn't know about this. Apparently, this was a script that existed in the 70s that no one wanted to make because it was too violent, too gruesome. And then David Lynch got his hands on it because he wanted to do something other than the flop of Dune.
That he had. Well, yeah. Well, I'm not going to go too much into it, but Dune, I like it, right? It's interesting, but I don't understand why you take Dune, which is pretty fucking complicated on its own, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you add shit to it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Why are you adding and changing shit? Like, it's already confusing enough. What are you doing? I don't know. I never got that part. That was because I had read Dune before that. I saw that movie and it just upset me. But anyway, like you can see as like, I'm trying to try to say it the right way. Denis Villeneuve has made the new Dune movies, right? And those are great. And he doesn't change almost anything. So
it's
like,
almost like there's 40 years of material to go off.
Right. I'm just saying, like it's there's enough there to like, if you just film it straight, like there's enough moving parts. Like don't add any more to it. You're going to confuse the fuck out of people. And I think that's what happened. Not only that, but I think his like original cut of the film was like 12 hours long. Something like that. There was a lot of fights back and forth. I would have loved to see. I don't think I could watch a 12 hour version, but I would love to see the longer version. Sorry, I digress here. But yeah, so yeah. But this one is pretty tame by David Lynch standards. It's a relatively straightforward story. We get all the answers that we're looking for is like, whose ear it is, what the significance of those characters and everything. We get all that stuff.
Yeah. But I can say it definitely being too extreme for 70s mainstream cinema.
I don't know, man. Like I Spit on Your Grave.
That's more horror, underground horror than
but
like,
you know what I'm saying? Like that's the kind of shit they were making in the 70s. Like I'm maybe like big money, maybe like one of the big studios had it.
Yeah.
I could see a big studio not wanting to make it.
Yeah, that I think that's what happened, is that he got this. So it's not necessarily him putting his David Lynch touch on it. It's something that already existed. that he didn't necessarily like write right. You know what I mean? That's probably why it has really has that happy that ending. But like I said, I couldn't, as we were discussing before, I couldn't tell you if I've seen this movie or not. Maybe I did. Maybe I did. Maybe it's been so many things I've watched potentially that I know most of the scenes, the story, and everything else. I don't know.
Well, not only that, but like, you know, Kyle MacLachlan is in just about anything David Lynch does.
Correct.
So like, if you've seen Kyle MacLachlan get a David Lynch thing, it's kind of hard to differentiate.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I even knew Lauren Dern was in it. I knew that her crying face in this. I don't know. I couldn't tell you. I mean, no, you didn't watch this when it came out. You kind of found David Lynch in the 90s and you went back to watch this then?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
No, yeah. I did not know about Blue Velvet. And that's, no, it wasn't like watching Commando and then going to Blue Velvet. No, I was very firmly in the action category in the 80s. No, yeah. And it was later on. I'll talk about it a little more when we get to Lost Highway. But yeah, it was Lost Highway kind of brought me into David mm-hmm. Lynch. And then I started watching all the movies I could after that.
Now, do you want to do your highlights first? You want me to go first?
I'll go first.
It's okay. Fine.
So I love the, like, you know, it's like kind of like old school Americana, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like a weirdly like twisted version of that, which is great. It's great backdrop for this particular story.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like this movie is basically like a amateur noir detective story. I mean, really, that's what it is.
Yes.
I like the way that the music really fits into that, right? It's got like that kind of like brassy jazz that they always had in those old noir detective movies, and it really tries to bring that through, which is
really interesting, especially when like they're dancing to like ragtime jazz,
right?
For a gang, which like you would think like that doesn't fit. But
well, I think those work. Are like the genuine David Lynch things that he puts yeah. in there. They're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's yeah, that those are his touches, you can tell. But again, I like that overall vibe. And I will say the cast is pretty cool. I mean, like Dennis Hopper is amazingly weird in this movie.
He had two movies come out in 86 then. This
Dennis and, Hopper did?
Yeah, this and Texas Chainsaw 2. Wasn't that 86? Yeah. Sure. Unhinged in both.
Right. And I'm saying, like, this is the era where Dennis Hopper really, like, just started getting weird and just doing whatever. He's still there. Like, he's still doing weird shit. But he'll, like, randomly pop up in, like, big blockbuster movies, and then he'll be, like, in weird indie shit. He's all over the place. But anyway, he's fun. But he's great. He's very awesomely weird in this movie. Yeah, we got Kyle MacLachlan, we got Laura Dern, we got Isabella Rossellini, who's Italian. Italian, or very Italian accent. Mm-hmm. And even your buddy Brad Dourif's in this.
He sure is. You couldn't tell it was him, but he's in it.
He's there. He's got his like awesome like Miami Vice suit on.
And what is it? Sam from Quantum Leap.
Yeah, the hologram. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's in it too.
Yeah, Dean, what's his name? Dean Stockwell, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great in it because he's such a weird character. That's a David Lynch character, for sure.
Oh, easily.
He's just like weirdly painted up, and you expect him to be all like effeminate, but then he gets violent.
Yep.
It's like, what the fuck character is this? Like, that's a David Lynch character. But yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah. You know, if you could almost envision this as a prequel to Twin Peaks.
for sure. You can see where he got it from.
Yeah, well, even like you even have said that the Agent Cooper from Twin Peaks is Kyle MacLachlan's character from this, because what made him interested to become an FBI agent? Well, these events, because he was true crime enthusiast.
Right, yeah, he was an amateur detective when right. he was in college, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely see that, and you know, because Twin Peaks only came out 4 years after this, and you can see all the groundwork there for it, which is really interesting to go back and do that. Now, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of Blue Velvet, but if you like Blue Velvet, there's at least three versions in this movie for you.
Right? Yeah, there's like the original version. There's the Isabella Rossellini version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just interesting. Like. Yeah, Dennis Hopper is just. Chaos at best. Like I can't imagine getting the mindset. I can imagine the direction was be as fucking weird as you can.
Yeah, and drop as many F-bombs as possible.
I say half his dialogue is fucked.
He says it at weird times, like, what? Are you referring to the fuck as a person or as a thing or as a action?
He uses it every part of the sentence in the right. English language as you can. Yeah. Yeah, but he's really unhinged, and I like it. And it's interesting seeing Laura Dern, a young Laura Dern. She's like barely 18.
Well, I had to look it up. In this movie, she was like 20 something.
But yeah, it's like only a couple years before Jurassic Park 2, which is great.
Yeah, but again, yeah, they're obviously too old to be high school. But like mm-hmm. again, these are people that they look older than they are. So like they look like they're 30, but they're really still in their 20s.
Yeah. That's all I have. I'll go on my low points. It's weird to pick up a girl in front of the high school that you don't really know when you're not in high school.
Is it?
I think so. When you didn't know them in high school? Yes. I'm just throwing that caveat in there.
Giving her a ride.
Uh-huh. In front of her boyfriend.
That's just seasoning.
Yeah. PBR. Screw that Heineken shit, get PBR. No, they're both bad. I thought it was interesting but weird that essentially the gang was all 50-year-olds.
They're professional gangsters. Gangsters don't like people outside their own little group,
I guess, but Brad Dourif was young compared to everyone else that was there. And I, you know, that how hot that when Sam was singing into that trouble light, my dad has that trouble light. It gets fucking hot. He was probably burning his hand fake singing into that damn trouble light. And just such a weirdness that David Lynch is like, and all of a sudden I'm going to go to this transition hallway and sing to people for record in front of a light. Why? I don't know.
Right, exactly. We're getting to the essence of David. Here. Things are done because they can be done.
Also, don't punch the driver.
Yeah, that's a solid. Yeah, that's solid advice.
Especially with that, because I'm pretty sure he reused that road scene from Blue Velvet in the next two movies of the highway being shot.
Well,
feels like it. Yeah, because that guy was driving like a maniac and on his nitrous and just crazy. But yeah, don't punch the driver. That's what I got. How about you?
Yeah, there's lots of like close-ups of bugs.
Yes, there is.
Movie that I did not like. That was gross and yucky. Like the bizarre sex encounters. This movie, I don't know what the fuck is going on or who like their intimacy coordinator was, but holy shit, they need a new job. That's just
I don't think they
bizarre.
Had
them. It's weird. I don't think they had them back then at all. I'm just
no.
Sure. But yeah, I feel like that bar scene was a Heineken ad. It felt like a Heineken ad. Like he's like, "Oh, would you like some Heineken?" Like, and then he says Heineken like in three other scenes. Like even when he's taking a piss by himself, he's like, "Oh man, shouldn't have drank all that Heineken." Like, why?
Did Heineken just make it to the States at that point?
They were very. It was very popular in the late 80s. So okay. I think this is that time period. And then the ending was happy and bullshit. I didn't really like it, but whatever. But like that fake fucking bird.
Oh, that is awful.
What the fuck is with this fake ass bird? Like the bird wasn't doing anything. Like it was just sitting there. I think it had a bug in its mouth, but like you could have used any stock footage of a fucking bird. It wouldn't have mattered. Like, why did you go through all the money of building a fake weird animatronic bird for no reason? I was like, this is just bizarre.
I just figured some eighth grade school project. I don't know.
Right. I mean, that's what it looks like. But I was just like, why? What is the point of this stupid bird?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's all I got. All right. So Blue Velvet from 1986. You want me to go first? You want to go first?
You can go first.
I like this movie. I like this movie a lot. I think it's fun. I will give it an 8. We're doing musical side characters because every movie has at least one character that's a musician.
Yeah.
musical side characters. There you go. How many musical side characters would you give this
movie? You know, as far as I can recall, I'm just gonna say this is the first time I've seen this movie in its entirety. It is a bizarre movie, to say the least. Do I like it more than Dune? Hell, that's a tough one. I don't know. I will give this. It's solid. I will give this 6.5 musical side characters out of 10. I know I don't have the I'm a, you know, snob when it comes to movies, and I just don't like always the artsy things. Not always my cup of tea. So
we all have our own tastes, buddy. I just like to tease you. That's all.
I appreciate it for what it is. Will I ever watch this again? Probably not.
Oh. Sad.
But yeah.
All right. So now we're moving 6 years into the future here, with Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, which I looked up, you know, because I was like, are you supposed to watch this before or after the show? And like almost everyone said, like, you have to watch the show first. You have to watch the two first seasons of the show and then watch the movie, or else you'll be completely lost. Or like most of it won't make any sense. I'm like, oh, well, I'm watching it anyway.
I don't think it matters.
Here's this. If you already know like who the killer is, it doesn't matter. Because that's really the only thing that this spoils. And I already knew that.
Well, okay. So yeah, I looked at this too. It's essentially, it's a spiritual successor to the TV show, but it doesn't actually answer any of the cliffhangers from the TV show, but it's also then a prequel to the TV show as well, with weird ass shit.
Right, but like, if you didn't know who the killer was, the movie just gives that away.
I mean, that's very, very true. So, yeah. But yeah, so essentially we are, it says it's deleted scenes from the seasons of Twin Peaks. I don't believe that necessarily be true, because I don't think it matters. Essentially, after the show was canceled, essentially David Lynch petitioned to get this film made, and he did. And like I said, it's kind of visiting Agent Cooper, Kyle MacLachlan stuff, which he asked for a very limited role, and he got a very limited role in this movie. Concerning being the kind of the head guy. But yeah, essentially we open up with a kind of woman that gets killed and discover her body, and then for some reason then the FBI agents decide to have fisticuffs with the cops with, you know, Kiefer just watching on. And that's that, trying to get the body. Then we kind of go like a year later, and this is the last week of Laura Palmer's life, which her death is the catalyst to the Twin Peaks TV show.
Right. What a hell of a week, right?
I know. But yeah, essentially, you know, if you don't know who Laura Palmer is, she's like this pristine prom queen, high school cheerleader that everyone loved in this town of Twin Peaks, which is just, everyone in that town is bizarre in their own way. You know, everyone that pretty much was in the TV show has an appearance in this movie as well, because there's a lot of, like I said, crazy ass people there. But yeah, it's essentially she's trying to like get drugs from her boyfriend who kills a hooker because they got like baby laxative powder. Said there's just a lot of stuff. Like I said, we just learned last week of Laura. And just like, you know, she is being honed and trying to like have visions of Bob, which, spoiler, is the evil demon force that kills her in the TV show through her dad.
Right. Well, you know, this is David Lynch. So David Lynch will tell you that, oh, this is a totally separate thing, but he doesn't say what kind of thing. So most of the time that means that it's just a different manifestation or like a different facet of that person. So it is her dad. It's just a different like facet of her dad, like almost like a split personality. But like you can see that it's actually him, because like her dad is like freaking out and like getting like murderously excited when he sees like naked girls. You know what I mean? So like, it's definitely a part of him. It's not something that just takes him over.
But it's, that's the illusion in this, is that. But well, like,
again, it's David Lynch. The day he always does that.
Yeah, like I said, there's a whole bunch of side character stuff that just doesn't really matter. You know, if you don't get, if you don't know who the characters are, you're not going to care about why this woman's crying at the diner, why the guy comes back there and comforts her, even though he's doing all this stuff.
Yeah, it's essentially the quick version of that story is one. Yeah, she's, everybody thinks she's the prom queen, but she gets addicted to drugs and she eventually like falls into prostitution to pay for her drug habit, and she has a lot of boyfriends.
Correct. And all while this is going there, we have the arm, which is, if anyone who's ever seen any video about the what the fuck moments from this movie, it's the red room and the arm, and probably the painstaking thing that people had to do to talk backwards. So David Lynch should play it forwards and have it sound like actual words, which is insane.
Right. Like, how many, can you imagine how many takes it took? I'm assuming they could have a way to see what it says on set, because I don't think they would film it, go back in the back room, listen to it, then come back out. I don't think so. There'd have to be a way to play it back, but God, that had to be a
the dialect coach would have to train these people how to say it so it would sound like holy shit.
Oh, I mean, but I was, dude, I was just like thinking about it. I'm like, I can't imagine how much time that wasted, how many days it took.
Yeah. But yeah, it's essentially then we get, you know, Agent Cooper Kyle McLaughlin saying, hey, that ring, don't let Laura get the ring. He's kind of in the past and the future and in this limbo, but he's the one that's talking normally compared to everyone else. And yeah, like I said, it's just essentially a drug bust and heroin, you know, cocaine addiction gone wrong in the 7-day period. That's right. About it. And we lead up to the, her body being dumped in the river, therefore starting a TV show.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, she falls into prostitution, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Her dad sees her in her prostitution state, flips out, and kills three people because of it, including her.
Yeah. But there's this whole other thing about the prostitute trying to figure out who this, what her dad looks like, and trying to figure out all the stuff. And, you know, like coroner taking the ring. And there's, like I said, just goofy stuff that it's like David Lynch was probably seemingly like on a lot of cocaine when he made this.
Right. But yeah, it's just, we'll talk about it later. Go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, that's the gist of the movie. It doesn't necessarily add anything to the show. Not really.
Well, I've never seen this show, so I couldn't tell you.
It is one of those things, like, you know, because it started like 1990, so I was too young to have watched it, understood, but everyone knows that, you know, it's a damn, you know, fine cup of coffee, all that stuff. And it's just, it's more of a weirdness factor to the show than anything else. Like, people were so excited for the return. And my wife tried watching the original TV show to watch for the return. She goes, I can't get through this.
I'm yeah, like, dude. That no one first can. The first episode is rough. It's like, it's 90 minutes long and it is just boring as shit. I've tried, I think I told you like three times. I've tried like three times. I've made it through the first episode, but I just can't get myself to do any more than that.
Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah. So maybe this was like the planned third season. He was going to explain how Laura got to this point, and so therefore it had to get scrapped and, you know, 10 episodes or 20 episodes or however many condensed into like an hour and a half movie, and this is what we got. Entirely possible. But that's my best explanation for this existence of this movie.
Yeah. Now, yeah, again, there's a lot of questions I have, but I think most of those, if I would have watched the show, I think they would be answered.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, there's not a whole lot more. There's just a lot of awkward scenes of people staring at each other, talking about how many huckleberries or whatever are in the muffins. Doesn't matter.
Right.
Ray Wise makes an appearance, you know, as, you know, and he wants to prepare for the Norwegians showing up.
I don't know.
But teaching her how, it's not like he's teaching her German, but how to say her name. And it's just weird as hell. Now, you watched this before, correct?
I have seen it before. But again, like, when I watched it before, I was kind of lost. what was going on. And it's the same thing as this. So I'm just like, I there's a lot of questions I have, a lot of stuff I don't get. And I'm pretty sure it's just because I haven't watched the show. But yeah, like back when Twin Peaks first came out, I was aware of it and I was going to watch it. But by the time it had gotten to the point where it's like, hey, you should watch this show, it had already started. And I was like, I'm really big on starting things at the beginning, especially a show like that, which
it's a murder mystery.
Right. But it's like a serial show. Like, you have to watch the episodes in order to know what's going on.
Correct.
And like, if it already started, how are you going to do that?
Yeah. We're talking about 1990. Yeah.
Right. Like that. Yeah. There's no streaming. There's no, you can't even like buy the series on like VHS or DVD. Like the series that would release like that was like very, very few and far between. And if they did, it was usually like the best episodes or whatever. It wouldn't be the whole thing.
Correct.
Anyway, so I never watched the show for that reason. But I did see enough of it here and there to know who the killer was.
Mm-hmm,
so Bob. I did know that. Right, I did know all about Bob and the Canadian tuxedo and all that stuff before then. But like, I actually read the book Laura Palmer's Diary during that time period, like when it came out, because I was a voracious reader. I would read anything that was around, and somebody had brought that book over and left it at the house. So I was like, oh, what's this? So I read it again, having not watched the show or the film at that point, and read the book. So it was, I know a lot. I basically know just about everything that happens in Twin Peaks. I just haven't actually watched it.
Yeah, I think everyone knows kind of the gist of it. But like I said, this is just, if this was direction of the season three, I don't think it would have lasted through season three, honestly. Yeah, I'll start with my highlights. Like I said, would this movie make more sense if you watched the show? I don't think so. I think this is bizarre enough that it wouldn't really matter. Like I said, maybe we know the characters a little bit more, but outside of that, it's just a good companion piece to the TV show. I'm not even sure if this is canon or not versus the TV show versus the return. I don't know. Do you know?
I have no idea. I haven't watched the original or the return, so I couldn't tell you.
I mean, yeah. I am the muffin, of course. That was just a weird scene. But it was weird in a good way. Yeah, and I said it's very David Lynch, and it's David Lynch at like is more of another stab at that crime noir, right? And you can see he's very interested in the crime world. He just does it weirdly. It's almost like he writes it backwards sometimes. But I do appreciate that. That's what I have. How about you?
I will say the movie starts off relatively normal.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's like a murder case that they're looking into, and then all of a sudden, like, it takes like this fucking left turn. Like it's like 20 minutes of normal movie, and then it takes this bizarre left turn where Chris Isaac grabs the ring, he completely disappears, and then we get transferred to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And there's like these weird sequences of like Cal McLaughlin like looking at a camera in the hallway, and fucking David Bowie shows up. They never say who he is or why he's there. Again, I'm assuming these are answered in the show. Some,
like he, literally shows like he poofs into existence in some scene.
Right.
Yes.
Right. He like pops up, and then like the his commanding officer, who's like scream yelling because he's wearing like an old timey hearing aid.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck? I'm pretty sure that was David Lynch.
It was.
Yeah. So I'm like, what the, why? There's so many things in the show that just, I don't know, makes sense. Maybe there's something that's makes sense of it in the show. I don't know. But as the David Bowie shows up, like, hey, that's David Bowie. And then just poof, gone, never mentioned again, never comes up, no reason for him to be there. But I think there's a lot of that going on. But anyway, but it's a fun mystery, right? There's a lot of like bizarre sequences of like, what the fuck is going on? I think if you watch the show, probably some of these would make more sense, but they are fun.
just
seemingly out of place if you've never seen it before. When they are in that bizarre red light brothel, the music was great.
Yes.
But the problem is the music is literally turned up so loud that the people are talking and you can't hear them, and they have to have subtitles. Why? Like, I don't know, why would you do that? I don't know, but the music was fun, and I thought the atmosphere of that scene was fun.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, it's linked to a low of like, why the fuck can you not hear them? And there's weird subtitles in that scene. It's I feel like it takes you out of it a little bit. Anyway, so Laura Palmer, there's a scene where when she finds out that her dad is Bob, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she does this weird, bizarre shaking thing. And I was like, man, I've only seen one other actress that could do that crazy acting, like shake acting like that. And I fucking looked it up. It's the same. It's the same actress. It's Cheryl Lee was in this and Vampires. So if you remember when we talked about Vampires, I was like, she is great at the shaking thing.
Yes.
She was awesome in that. And that's her. She does the same shaking thing in this movie. I guess that's like her thing. But I didn't know it was her at first. And I was like, holy shit, that is her. Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. But yeah, she still got it. The shaking acting, apparently.
Nice.
But that's it for my high points over my low points here. Yeah. Again, I already said like the fucking hearing aid, the yelling, like he's like the head of the office. Like how the hell do you be a head of an office if you can't hear anybody? Whatever. And again, like these people are supposed to be high school age. Like they're all like, you know, drug using adults. Like they look rough for
hell yeah.
High school age. Yeah. I mean like, yeah. They look like they're at least 30. Anyway, so the show is spoilers. I will say, like, if you haven't watched the show and you don't know what happens in the show, well, obviously you shouldn't be listening to this because we just spoiled it for you anyway. But yeah, you're going to find out some things that you don't want to find out if you really want to find it out organically through the show. Don't watch the movie first. But again, there's a lot of things that I probably don't get. There's a lot of like weird symbolism that I'm sure means something in the show. I don't know what it is. The characters, like, I don't know who these fucking people are.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing. If you watch Simpsons and the Who Shot Mr. Burns, they go into the Red Room and there's backwards talking and it's from this movie. And yeah, people talk about the Red Room and all the symbolism that is there. Like, people have done like dissertations, it feels like, over the symbolism in this.
Right. And like, I was aware of it because again, like, I had seen bits and pieces of it when it was on TV.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd seen like bizarre, like I knew who these characters are and stuff. I don't know their significance because I didn't watch the whole thing, but
right.
I knew of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, again, it's really linked to the show. You should probably watch the show first. That's all I'm going to say. So that's it for that. What do you got?
Yeah. You know, the 2x4 scene, unnecessary.
What?
It did nothing to the movie or to the plot, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, it's just people arguing about the size of a 2x4. The backwards talking hurts. Like I said, just as we said before, even think about how to do that. I'm like, I don't think I'd want to do that. The number of takes just to do it, it's just absurd.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about the whole time. I was like, man, how many times did they have to do that scene?
How many times did they have to do that? It feels like Kyle MacLachlan just didn't want to do it, so he got to speak normally.
Right, yeah. These other characters had to sit in a room and do it over and over and over and over again. He probably had like a second unit that did that, so he didn't have to deal with it himself.
Yeah, and like I said, it just felt like randomness at best. At the end, you know, Kyle MacLachlan hits his head against the mirror, and the doctor's like, you should go to sleep. No, you might have bleeding and concussed. Don't go to sleep, doctor. That's bad advice.
He's a doctor. He knows. He knows.
I doubt that. Yeah, as you said, spoilers for the show, but that's about it. So I'll go first for number of musical side characters. Maybe if I go back and rewatch the show, I'd revisit this, but I'm not going to otherwise. I'm going to give this, honestly, like 4 musical side characters out of 10. It doesn't feel necessary. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to go low, not that low. I was going to go low. I was going to say, again, I think I would appreciate this more if I had seen this show.
Mm-hmm.
What's here is, interestingly enough, is it something that I want to watch again? No. Maybe if I watch the show, I would want to watch it again, but right now I don't. So I'm going to give it a 5.5.
Okay. Take us through the dual stories.
Lost Highway. This is the movie that got me into David Lynch. In 1997, I was a huge Nine Inch Nails fan, as I think a lot of people were. I got into this film because I found out that Trent Reznor was doing the soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
He produced the whole soundtrack. He made like a couple of songs, like The Perfect Drug. I know a lot of people know that song that was from this soundtrack. That's where it originally came from. But he planned out all the whole soundtrack for it. That's how I found out about it. And I got into it, and I love this movie, and that's how I got into all the other ones. So I'm gonna make the story as simple as possible. Okay. And then we can discuss what you think it means. Okay. Because I have a theory. Well, it's a kind of a well-known theory, I guess, but it's my theory that I'm going with, and we'll see what you think. So, we'll do it the simple way. Bill Pullman is a professional saxophone player.
If you call that professional.
Yeah. Who has a wife of Patricia Arquette. Now, we already know about my problem with the Dermots, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dylan McDermott and Dermot Mulroney. I can never tell them apart. I have the same problem with Patricia Arquette and Rebecca De Mornay. I can never remember which one is fucking which.
Mm-hmm.
And I always call them by their other names, but like I know their faces. I just don't know. I can't put their names together.
If she was the boss in Severance, then it's Patricia.
Right, right. I know. If I see them, I know. But it's like sometimes I can't place the name. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I get like a brain problem. But the funny part is that I wanted to bring up in this film, there's another two people that I have that problem with. And they're also both in this movie. And that is Balthazar Getty and Giovanni Ribisi. I see them and I mix their fucking names up all the time. I know who they are. I see their face. I know the face. I can put the face to what they go to, but their names sometimes I reverse. So there's the three different people that I know of so far that I can do that to, and two of them are in this film. Anyway. So anyway, Bill Pullman, married to Patricia Arquette. He's a professional saxophone player. They live in a rich house. Essentially, they start getting videotapes in the mail, and it shows, like, first one shows the outside of their house, second one shows the outside of their house, and then they come inside and see them sleeping. And they're like, okay, this is weird. And we see that Bill Pullman and his wife have, like, a very strained relationship. Like, it's a very tense, like, not going well marriage. And then, essentially, his wife dies. At this point, it's unclear whether he did it or not, but there is video of him like in blood.
Yes.
Like while it's happening. And then he gets convicted of murdering her and he goes to prison. While he's in prison, he complains of a headache. He essentially melts and turns into another person.
Yeah.
That person then gets released from prison because obviously it's a completely different person. This person has no memory of being another person or anything. He's another guy who had his own life. And so he comes out and he goes back to his own life. His own life is Patricia Arquette, instead of being the saxophonist's wife, is now the girlfriend of like the local kind of mob boss, Mr. Eddie. The kid is a mechanic who works on Mr. Eddie's cars because he's, you know, mob boss, rich, he likes cars. So this is his mechanic that, you know, he's the greatest mechanic in the city, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So he ends up hooking up with the girl who is Patricia Arquette. They have like a love affair thing going. Mr. Eddie basically finds out about it. They say, okay, well, he knows we got to get money to run away. So she gets him, okay, here's what it's going to happen. I'm going to go bone this other guy for money, but he's got a lot of money. So after I bone him, you're going to come in, knock him out, and we're going to take all his money and leave. So basically that kind of plan goes through, only instead of them grabbing all the money and leaving, we kind of find out that she is going to blame his murder on him, and then she's just going to take all the money and leave. And then at that point, the kid turns back into Bill Pullman, and then they go out to the middle of the desert where this fence that supposedly is going to sell all this shit is. And it's this, you know, the mystery man. I get the mystery man comes up before I'll talk about Emix in a minute, but and then the cabin like blows up, and then that's the end. But he, Bill Pullman, gets back in a car and drives to his original house, says that, you know, the guy is dead, and then he gets chased by cops down the road, and the movie ends. Now that is just kind of the facts of what happened. Okay. Now, go ahead. What do you think the movie's really about? What do you think is going on?
I don't know.
You can say pass.
I looked at what people think it is. People are saying essentially it's purgatory and they're atoning for their sins, but I don't know. It feels like this was like a past life. Like him, he was a younger kid and Pete at the same time. I don't know. It feels like that. That's just it all in his head at this point.
Oh, right. There you go. So I've watched this movie a lot and I've thought about it a lot. And you know, even before I even looked it up on the internet, I had my idea was pretty close to this. I think, you know, stuff I found on the internet kind of fleshed it out. Anyway, what I think, again, there's no right answer here. I'm not saying this is definitively the right answer. I'm just saying this is what I think my answer is. David Lynch is notorious for not explaining his own movies. He says, get out of it, whatever you want to get out of it. I know what it means, but I'm not going to tell you. So here's what I think it is. Bill Pullman is kind of not satisfying his wife, right? It's pretty obvious in the weird sex scene that we have between them that she's not into it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he's not really doing anything to make her happy. So she cheats on him with another guy who's Robert Loggia, Mr. Eddie. Right. He finds out about it. He kills him, then comes back home and kills his wife.
Mm.
He gets convicted, rightfully so, for murdering his wife. You know, the guy he murdered in the middle of the desert, so they might not have found that body, that we don't know if they did or not. But, you know, when he's at that party and he says, you know, Dick Laurent is dead. Dick Laurent was Mr. Eddie's name in this world. And the guy was like, what do you mean he's dead? You know, because that guy is, like, probably looking for him and can't find him. And he says he's dead. Oh, like, oh, that's fucked up, right? So anyway, the mystery man, the guy, which is eerily played by Robert Blake, who's like a real life murderer. he's got the OJ thing going on, right? To where like he went to trial and he was acquitted of the murder, but then later on a civil trial found him liable. So it's like it's an OJ situation, but it's kind of like how OJ, everybody thinks that he did it. That's kind of this guy. Everybody mm-hmm. thinks that he did. Anyway, I'm not going to say one way or the other. I'm just saying that's common speech, right? So he goes to prison. He's very upset in prison about where he is and what's happening to him. So he essentially creates a new life for himself. Now, him turning into somebody else and leaving the prison is pure fantasy. That's obviously that can't happen.
Right.
So he makes himself up in this fantasy world where he is young and strong and has a great skill in working on cars and can please a woman. That's the big thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
He pleases two women to the point where they both want to be with him all the time because he's so great at sex, right? Which is kind of the opposite of what Bill Pullman is all about. So, you know, this is his great, you know, kind of like, you know, mystery, like, you know, I'm having fun with my, you know, made up life.
Escapism, and then yeah.
As things go along and his fantasy starts to fall apart, things from his real life start bleeding in, right? Like when he sees the picture and like he sees his wife and the new girlfriend, right, who has blonde hair, unlike his wife, like he's like, who is this? You know, it's the two things are bleeding together. Right. Mm-hmm. So he's just again dealing with his guilt for killing his wife, and he's trying to make up this new life where he's good, but because he's so messed up, his made up life is also falling apart. And then at the end, where he's just like driving away from the police and he starts like going, he's getting electrocuted. he's dying. Like, because again, he got sentenced to the electric chair.
Okay.
So he's essentially living in his fantasy world and refusing to live in reality. But he has to come back to reality because obviously he's going to fucking die in the electric chair. So at the very end, when he comes back to himself and he dies by getting electrocuted in the electric chair, but everything else was a fantasy.
I like that.
Well, that's the one that I thought is, again, my original thought was like, I'm pretty sure he's just like making up a more exciting life. You know, like that's what I thought. And then again, you know, I read stuff over time and talked to people, and that's what I think my version of it is.
I like it. I do. As I said, this is my first time seeing this, though.
Well, yeah. But again, this one has more horror elements than the other ones do. There's like, you know, blood and murder and weird guys. That was spooky. I guess it's got more horror adjacent stuff. More thriller adjacent stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is a psychological thriller too, where it's almost like Identity in a way with that pieces of it, right? That you have that disassociation that you don't know what's real and what's not, which is very intriguing and good in my opinion. That's why, you know, I like horror and good thrillers.
I'll interrupt you once again. I forgot to put my Mystery Man explanation in there because I guess that's kind of important.
Mm-hmm.
The Mystery Man is simply his desire to kill, because he doesn't see himself as somebody that can kill. He doesn't want to see himself in that way. So he imagines this other person that is his like kind of manifestation of wanting to murder first his wife and then towards the end, Dick Laurent. That's why when he talks to him, he goes, I don't go anywhere. I'm not invited.
Right.
Meaning like you want to kill your wife. You brought me in, right? And there's also another important line is when he's talking to the police, they're like, do you have a video camera? And he's like, no, I don't. I refuse to have one because I want to remember things my own way. I don't want to remember things the way that they actually happened. I want to remember them my own way. So again, that's two big things that happen there that basically tell you that this guy who nobody else interacts with is his like manifestation of murder. And that he's remembering things, you're in his mind because he's remembering things as he wants them to be remembered, not how they happen.
Right.
There you go. Sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, yeah. Because, you know, the ad's that like, oh, I'm in your house already. I'm like, well, how's that possible? Well, because it's not it's you. I like that.
Right. Yeah. He's not a real person because, again, nobody else interacts with him. The only person that interacts with him is Bill Pullman.
Right.
And the only time anybody else ever interacts with him is Dick Laurent at the end when he's getting shot. And that's because Bill Pullman can't see himself as the person pulling the trigger. So he manifests this other guy as, oh, he pulled the trigger, not me. But right. In reality, he did.
Yeah. And dismembered his wife.
Correct.
Yeah. Cool. Okay.
All right. So you want me to do my high points first?
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Number one, soundtrack, right? That's the reason into this movie. I own the soundtrack. I own like a couple copies of it on different formats. It is, it's great. Again, the whole thing is produced by Brent Reznor. This is during the time period where he was like collaborating with David Bowie a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So David Bowie's on the soundtrack. Marilyn Manson has like, what, three songs on the soundtrack, I think.
And a weird ass porn cameo.
Correct. Him and Twiggy both are in the weird ass porn cameo.
Yep.
Their names, you know, their names are interesting to me. There's like, you know, Marilyn Manson, Twiggy Ramirez, Gidget Gein,
mm-hmm.
Madonna Wayne Gacy. They're fun names. But anyway, so yeah, there's multiple Marilyn Manson songs on here. The one song that's probably my favorite Marilyn Manson song is on this album. It's Apple of Sodom. I love that song.
Mm.
But anyway, we get song that's not Du Hast, which automatically gets points because I heard Du Hast too many damn times. But this song is good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a fantastic soundtrack. Number one. Two is again, the Mystery Man is played by Robert Blake, who we already talked about is probably a real murderer. That's why he plays so creepy, I think. So he knows how to, be in that state of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Again, videotaping people sleeping in their house is like one of the things that terrifies me. There's a few movies that do it, and it always scares the shit out of me, and they do it. Like that scene in Strange Days where like, he's like seeing somebody move into his house and like fuck with him while he's sleeping. like, that's messed up. And that's the same thing in this, is like somebody watching me sleeping, like, fuck that. And the cast in this is crazy. There's crazy. There's so many people in this. I mean, we got Henry Rollins, one of the prison guards, Balthazar Getty, Giovanni Ribisi, Bill Pullman, Patricia Arquette, Robert Blake, Robert the Asia is in this. Gary Busey is in it. I mean, fucking Richard Pryor is in this movie.
Yeah.
There's like so many people. I think they just all wanted to like work with David Lynch at this point. And it was like, throw me in whatever you want. And he did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. Yeah. You already talked about Manson and Twiggy being in it, which is bizarre. I mean, it's a tiny little scene, but it's interesting. That's all I got for high points.
Oh yeah. You know, epic sax is fantastic.
That's on my list, but it ain't on this side.
Sweaty epic sax. I think it was so weird. It seemed like it was so bizarre and awkward to shoot, which is great. Like I said, doing research for this, apparently this story was kind of the inspiration for Silent Hill 2.
I don't doubt it.
Which is great. I love Silent Hill 2 a lot. So it's kind of that piece.
Well, I mean, yeah, Silent Hill has a lot of the same elements, to where, like, when people go into Silent Hill, they become different versions of themselves. Yeah.
Yep.
And like, how they picture themselves is more important as to who they are. So, yeah, I can definitely see that as being a big influence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Of course, yeah, I also have Rammstein here, because, of course, I'm sorry.
You gotta say it like that. That's how he says it.
Soundtrack is amazing.
Roll the R.
I like when he pulls the guy and essentially, gets him off the road because he like tailgated him. He's like, check the fucking manual. I thought that scene was just great. It's hilarious. Because it's who it is, right? It just, you can't take him that seriously, I feel like, especially in that, but I think he does it well. And that car is interesting. I'm like, how souped up was that car?
It had 1,400 horsepower.
I know. As you said, the cast just overall fantastic. So yeah, this is definitely horror, and that's why I enjoy it. I'll go on my low points. Sometimes there is too much of what the fuck moments.
no such thing. Come on.
I did not like the Manson cameo in the porn thing.
What?
I know.
Okay, now here's the thing. Don't get me wrong. I liked Manson from this time period.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would say Antichrist Superstar is like his Black Album, right? It's okay. It's decent. It's got some good songs on it, but you can see the change happening. Just like in the Metallica, the Black Album, right? It's a good album, but you can see the change is happening. And the album after that is trash. And that's what I think of Marilyn Manson after that, and after what I think of Metallica after that. So right about this time period is when he was riding high. And right after this time period is where he started his decline. For me, a lot of people still, like, I think his like money making is still going up at this point. But for me, his like talent and my interest in him is crashing after that.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed Manson a lot. I mean he has good cameos. I thought his cameo in Jawbreaker was fantastic. If you ever watched Jawbreaker.
I have. There was also the one where he was I don't remember. I remember he was in a trailer and Mike Patton was his dad. I don't remember what movie though. I've seen it. I know I could, whatever. We'll tell you. But he was okay in that movie.
Yeah, and like I said, without diving heavily into this, it's hard to fully understand if he actually killed them or not. Mike said, I agree with your assessment that he did kill them, but it's a kind of almost an open-ended question in a lot of these pieces.
Well, for sure. Again, this is, this is my interpretation, which is, I'm not the only person that thinks that, but this is a movie that's open for interpretation. All of his movies are, and that's why I like them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you watch them and you can talk to somebody about it, and you could literally have watched the same, just watch the same movie and have two completely different takes on it. Cause that's what I like about them. It gets your noodle going, right? It can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. That's all I really got for my low points. How about you?
I'd say the married relationship that they had in the beginning of this is uncomfortable. It is like, it's just like 1 second away from domestic violence. It just, it feels so bad. And then on the other side of it, right? Like the Pete and Alice relationship is just toxic. It's like, oh God, get out. Like, what are you doing? Like, this is going to a bad place. She ends up, you know, being the femme fatale of like, you know, I'm going to ruin your life and walk away. And there's nothing you can do about it. And you could see it coming. Obviously he can't because he's blinded, you know, by her, but that's that. And then again, yeah, I'm gonna say that saxophone solo is fucking ear piercing. Like, what are you doing? Stop and calm down. But I guess that crazy jazz stuff I don't usually get down with, so that's probably what it is. That's all I got.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So Lost Highway, 1997. Do you want me to go first?
Sure.
I love this movie. I don't think that's a surprise. but I will give it a 9.15.
Okay. Yeah, I said this is of the three, this is my favorite of the three, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I knew that was going to be the case.
Yeah, it's like, especially after watching them in this close relationship, it's weird, but not even close to as weird as like Firewalk with Me, hands down. That being said, I will give this 8.5 musical side characters out of 10. It is an interesting thing. You know, it's almost, you know, it's that mid to late 90s crime noir stuff that we got. Like, you know, we have, you know, I think Seven was a big part of this. Been like, crap, why can't I think of it? We watched it with Denzel Washington with the demon.
Fallen,
yeah. You know, and we have a lot of that more surreal crime horror side of things that we got in this time period. I think this fits in right there with it.
Yeah, it's the vibe that I got. There's a lot of movies that I got into because of this movie. I mean, I was into weird stuff before this, but I hadn't really touched on David Lynch other than, like, you know, reading the Twin Peaks book and knowing what Twin Peaks was, but I didn't get into it. So this was the one that really opened the door for me. But yeah, like, I've watched Twin Peaks, or I've watched David Lynch movies with other people, and like, I've had like really great conversations, and I've also had people get very angry at me. So it's like, it's all over the place. Like, sometimes it's like, oh, it was good. Like, you know, here's what I think. Here's what I think. And then there's like, what the fuck? Why did you make me watch this? Like, I hate this. I'm like, wow. But so I've gotten very crazy, like polarized reactions from a lot of people that I make watch David Lynch movies, which is why I don't usually make people watch them, but I'm torturing you this time. But that's all I got. Anything else you want to add? All right. So, yes, it is possible. You can have a movie that definitively tells you that God is real and not have it be preachy and heavy-handed. I know. It's hard to believe, but it can happen. So join us next week for some films that follow all the religious rules but still manage to tell a good story. That's right. We'll be watching Constantine, Legion, and Frailty. Nice. I've seen all of them. Have you seen all these?
I was going to watch Frailty because the guy was going to be coming on to our other show that wrote this, but that hasn't happened. But yeah, I've seen Constantine and Legion. Love them both.
Assume, yeah.
Love them. I Constantine, easily my favorite character from that comic series.
Pretty sure that they're going to do a Constantine 2. Mm-hmm. Like, I see Keanu Reeves like championing for it all the time.
Yep.
Legion had a fucking TV show based on it. I didn't watch that TV show. I just know that it did.
Oh yeah, we'll get into it. But yeah, spoiler alert, the angel of it all, I think, was fantastically told.
Yeah, no, they're fun stories. They're religious stories, but they're fun stories, and you'll see.
Oh yeah.
So that's next week. So remember, we watch bad movies, so you don't have to.
And this has been Graveyard Saying, "Have you checked on the children?"
This is Salem saying, long live the new flesh.